pray together. God, we've just affirmed and sang this love you have for us over one another. And it's our prayer today that we would open ourselves, that we would open our hearts, that we would open our minds, that we would open our ears to the voice of your Spirit as she draws us, as she guides us, as she invites us. That this Christ who we follow, this Christ who compels us, who intrigues us, who transforms us, may his voice be the voice, may his words be the words, and may we really, really open ourselves to engaging what it would look like to become our best selves, the selves that you long for us to become as you transform us and guide us, as you mold us like a potter molds clay. So maybe we'd be open today. That's our prayer. We ask this in Jesus' name. And everybody said, good morning. Welcome to Morgantown Community Church. If this is your first time joining us, we're thrilled you're here. My name is Josh, and I am one of the pastors here. If you're watching us on Facebook Live, welcome. We're so glad you're here. And if you want to drop something in the comments section to let us know you're here, we'll respond to that as soon as we can. But we're glad you all are engaging with us there. We are in a series. Every year in January, we spend the first few weeks exploring who we are as a community and who we hope to become as a community is probably the better way to put it. And so we talk about our mission as a church, and we talk about our values. If you think about it like this, our mission is what we want to do in the world, and our values are essentially the way we try to do that. Does that make sense? So the mission is the thing we're here to do, and the values are essentially the ideas, the concepts that drive our mission. This is the way we seek to fulfill our mission. And so if you haven't been with us, you can check these teachings out on our website. You can go back and watch them on Facebook. But I'll just kind of do a quick recap of the first couple weeks of this series that get us where we are today. And we began the first week by talking about our mission. And we're not really shy about talking about our mission. It's plastered over that wall back there every week when you come in and out. Hopefully you see that. But our mission as a community is to empower people to take the next step on their journey with Christ. That's what we're here to do. We're here to empower people. So people are central to that. People, just like me and you, we're central to this mission. And we are here to empower one another to take the next right step. And one of the things we've been exploring is it's not the next 10 steps, right? That's impossible. I think one of the biggest amounts of guilt and shame that come from the spiritual life are when we expect ourselves to suddenly become a person we never were overnight. Right? Have you ever had that pressure on your life? But what's interesting is we can look at the very fabric of creation and we know that that's not how things work, right? How many of you in this room have kids? Yeah, how many of you, your kids were once babies? Okay, so they're not like pod people or anything weird like that. Good. Now, when your babies were born, how many of you expected them to be completely self-sufficient by the age 2? Okay, didn't happen, did it? Didn't happen. You're still changing diapers and cleaning stuff. I mean, this is what happens. We create these tiny little humans and we put them in the world and they have no idea what's going on. And then they grow up and they turn 30 and they still have no idea what's going on, but at least they're on their own at that point, right? It doesn't happen. Maybe not. So that's a whole other conversation. But the reality is we get this, right? We get that there's this development and this process where you're learning things. And in the beginning, they're starting to crawl, and then they're pulling up, and then they're standing with those wobbly rubber legs, and they're looking at you like, am I going to do this, or am I going to fall? And they fall down, and what do? You stand over them and say, shame. How dare you? No, we have lots of social workers in our church, and we'd love to let you in. If you do that to your kids, we'd love to have you meet them. No, that's not what you do. You pick them back up, and you help steady them, and then they start taking off into the world, and then you wish they would slow down. And this is the spiritual life. We're wobbly. Sometimes we make the right decisions. Sometimes we don't. Sometimes we respond to people in the right way, our enemies, our friends. Sometimes we don't. And the reality is that that's not something that's going to change overnight. We grow. We're transformed bit by bit, step by step, right moment by right moment, right next step by right next step. And when you can give yourself sort of the freedom to know that you are loved and accepted just as you are, it gives you the freedom then to say, okay, I'm going to try to take a step. And I may crash and burn and fail, but if I do, I'm going to get back up and I'm going to keep at it. There's something powerful about it. That's why we exist, to do that for each other, to be that support system. We pick each other up and we keep going. And then our first value we talked about last week is we seek to honor the image of God in every single human being. every single human being. Now, we talked what all that means last week, that it doesn't mean agreeing with everybody. It doesn't mean that there aren't people who are doing really terrible things in the world and they shouldn't be held accountable. What it means is we refuse to dehumanize them. We refuse to not acknowledge that they are made in the image of God and they are deeply loved. No matter how broken, flawed, busted, every single human being is loved. And we have this policy here at MCC of radical welcome. And if you've ever walked into these doors, you see that banner hanging out. We talked about that last week. We have a radical welcome for every single human being. Whoever you are, whatever your story is, I was talking to somebody before the service. We will never put accept in your name at the bottom of that, right? It's everybody's welcome. Nobody's excluded. Everybody has a place at this table. And I know that makes sense to us, for most of us, but I got to tell you, I talk to people from all around the country. I get messages from people all around the country who are in churches that aren't like that. And they're hurting, and they're in pain, and they're wounded. And what we have here in that sense is very special, and it's something that we have to, in a sense, guard. But the minute we begin to look across the room and think, well, what are they doing here? Then we have a real problem. Right? It doesn't mean you have to sit next to everybody because, you know, there may be, but it does mean anybody who comes through these doors, we welcome and we give them space to take their journey with us as well. And then today I want to talk about our second value, which is this idea of transformative community. We believe that the best way to do the spiritual life is in community with other people. And we believe that when you're in community with other people, things happen. And those things are transformative, which means they help make us who we're made to be. Now, here's the thing I've learned about relationships. They're messy, aren't they? Have you ever been in a relationship that's just messy and it's difficult? And unless you have like the perfect life, how many of you have ever been hurt by a parent, a friend, a spouse, a random person at Black Friday at Walmart? Like, how many of you have ever been hurt by another human being? Like, so when you then commit yourself to being in relationships with all these other weirdos that we live with in the world, 7 billion of us, by the way, when you commit to live your life in community with those people, you are committing your life to all the beautiful, painful, messy, upside down, life-giving, all that stuff that comes with actual relationships. That's what you're committing to. And we believe as a community that the best way to grow in our journey is to grow with other people, right? It's to be in dialogue. It's to be in conversation with other people. And I want to explore this through one of the stories of the earliest Christian community. But before I jump into that, and it's going to be in Acts 2 if you want to follow along. But before we jump into that, I need to say something about the early church. We have this tendency as people to idealize the past. Right? How many of you have ever done this? Like you look back on yourself in high school and you think, if I could just get back to that. When then you were thinking, if I could just get out of this, right? Right? Or you like you're in one job and you're looking and the grass is greener on the other job, if I could just get that job, everything would be so much better. But then you look back and you think, how many of you did this? You were first married and you weren't making any money and you were, and I vividly have memories of Carla and I scrounging through our couch for change for a milkshake, right? I mean, there were weeks we didn't know if we were going to get groceries when we first got married. How many of you had those sorts of experiences? And at the time, you think, I can't wait till we stop making tens of dollars and start making hundreds of dollars, right? And then, but what happens is eventually you get to a point where you've maybe climbed the ladder a bit and your income's picked up a bit and you're no longer scrounging through the couch cushion for milkshake money. But how many of you have ever been in the spot where you look back on those moments and you think, wasn't it much simpler back then? And deep down, you know, you don't want to go back to scrounging through the couch, but we have this way of idealizing the past. And sometimes the past was pretty great, but sometimes it wasn't. The Hebrews, after they were delivered from slavery in Egypt, they get into the wilderness and life is tough. And you know what they begin doing? They begin sitting around going, maybe we should just, man, life in Egypt was pretty great, wasn't it? We had all the food we wanted, and yeah, there was backbreaking labor that we weren't being compensated for, but man, wasn't it better off? Weren't we better off back there? I mean, if we're not careful, and here's why I say this. I think sometimes we overinflate how great the early church was in the sense that we begin to act like they had no problems and that they all, like their gatherings were just sitting around singing Kumbaya together and holding hands, right? With flowers in their hair, and it was all beautiful, and then we've messed the whole thing up. If you really study the early church, what you'll realize is they had a lot of issues too. Now, they did some things a lot better than we do because they grew up in a different sort of economy and a different sort of life that made sense to them, and we should probably get back to those things. But there were problems they had that we don't have. Like, they really had arguments about who was welcome. were Gentiles welcome in this early Christian community? Because it began as a Jewish movement. Will we eat with those filthy, nasty old Gentiles? Does God love them too? Right? This is a real problem in the early Christian community, and they are really fighting about it. So here's what I'm going to say. The early Christian community had some beautiful aspects to it and some things that we should bring forward. We don't need to idealize it to the point where we say, we just, and I used to say this in my 20s all the time because I heard somebody else say it, and that's what you do in your 20s. I would say, we need to be a first century church. I don't know if you ever heard that or said that. Anybody? Here's the problem with that statement. Do you know what a first century church was like? First of all, they didn't bath very often. So the first century church smelled horrible. But beyond that, they didn't have so many of the things we have that make this whole thing, like, there was no air conditioning, they were fighting about who could come. Like, those are things I don't want to go back to, right? I don't want to go back to certain things about the way things were in the first century. But there was a spirit present in that church that we need to transport to the 21st century so we can deal with 21st century issues, not first century issues. And so I just want to say that before we idealize what we're about to read is beautiful. Just know they had their own sets of problems and issues, like everybody does. When you see that family that look like they have it all together, they don't. Right? When you see that person who looks like they have it all together, they don't. And if they tell you they do, they're just lying. So that's your tidbit of wisdom for the day. Here's Acts chapter 2. This is about, there was this day of Pentecost, which is this Jewish feast, and the Spirit empowers these first believers on the day of Pentecost. And after that, this is sort of the result. The believers devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching, to the community, to their shared meals, and to their prayers. A sense of awe came over everyone. God performed many wonders and signs through the apostles, and the believers were united and shared everything. They would sell pieces of property and possessions and distribute the proceeds to everyone who needed them. Every day they met together in the temple and ate in their homes. They shared food with gladness and simplicity. They praised God and demonstrated God's goodness to everyone. Isn't that an important line? They demonstrated God's goodness to everyone, not just the people in their community, but they demonstrated it to the whole world around them. The Lord added daily to the community, those who were being saved. And this word saved doesn't mean people getting ready to go to heaven when they die. It means people being liberated from one way of life into another, right? Which is much bigger than what happens when you die. It's what happens while you live. And so this is this early Christian community. Everything's happening at a frenetic pace. It's busy, busy, busy. All sorts of new people are coming in. They're all sharing their stuff together. They're living their lives really in relationship with one another. And it's transforming everything and everyone around them. And so I just want to take this text, and if you're here a lot, you'll know that the way I'm going to do the sermon today and next week are pretty different from how we usually do the sermons. But there's a few important things about community we just need to talk about in the context of how our church functions and should function. Does that make sense? So I want to look at them, and I want to think about us. Look at them, think about us. So I want to begin with this. I've come to believe that community is not accidental, it's intentional. Community is not accidental, it's intentional. You will never become really deep in a relationship with another human being by accident. At some point, there is a moment where you decide, okay, I'm going to be in this relationship with this person. And it doesn't mean you always have that define the relationship moment. You know, like, have you ever been in that situation where you're sort of dating somebody and you're not sure if they think you're exclusive and you're not sure if you think you're exclusive, so you have to have that discussion? I'm not saying you have to have that with everybody in your community. Like, hey, so are we friends or what? Like, that could make things weird. But there is this sense of we have to choose it. We have to choose to be involved in a community. Now, you can attend a church and not be connected to a community, right? Does that make sense? You can stand in a car full of garages and that doesn't make a garage full of cars. That's weird. And it doesn't make you a car. You get the point. As confusing as I made that, you get the point. Community is not accidental. There's this line at the beginning. They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching, to the community, to their shared meals, and to their prayers. This, by the way, shared meals here essentially means Eucharist. It means communion. Very differently from how we do it. We do sort of a rip and a dip and a, you know. And in the ancient world, in the first Christian community, they actually had meals because the Christian community was populated by haves and have-nots. people who may not get a meal. And what they would do when they got together is everybody would bring what they had. And you had people who could afford to bring the nicest food, sharing their food with people who could only afford to bring something maybe smaller. And yet the rich were eating the food the poor people brought. The poor people were eating the food the rich brought. Everybody shared together. And when you see breaking bread in the New Testament, they're talking about these meals. And they called them the agape feast. Agape is this Greek word for love. And there's several words, but this word means like self-giving, generous love, sharing love, love where you're putting the other first. It's not me first, it's the community first. It's not about what's best for me all the time, it's about what's best for us. And this word, devoted themselves, it's this word, proskarteruntes, which will be on the final exam, if you're wondering. Spelling will have to be correct. It means to attach oneself, to be engaged in. And actually, most translations, I like how this translation does almost everything, but most translations do this better. A lot of the new ones say they continually devoted themselves. There's a difference, right? I joined a gym once. More than once. Those New Year resolutions get you and they lock you in for 2 years, right? And then you have to move 50 miles away to get out of the contract. You can join a gym but not participate in the gym. They're talking about people who were continually, in the way they live their lives, in the pattern of their relationships, they were continually committing themselves, engaging themselves, and attaching themselves to one another. And this didn't happen by accident. It happened because they were making choices about how they would live their lives, and they chose to live it in community. And the thing we find in churches all over the place, especially in the 21st century, where we live in an unbelievably consumer-centered society, right, where everything's about consumerism, is that we essentially have lost that sense of being committed to a people. Committed in good times and bad times, committed when we agree and when we disagree, right, where we say, I'm going to put my stakes down in this community, and I'm going to raise my family in this community, and we're going to do this together. There's something really powerful on Mother's Day every year when we bring these new babies up, and we as a church commit to being a part of this process of them growing up into the people they're, you know, created to be in the world. There's something beautiful and powerful about that, but it doesn't happen on accident. When we decided to go to one service back last summer, that was a really tough decision. But at the same time, one of the things we were finding is I was talking to people from the 9 o'clock and the 10:30, and I would bring somebody up, and the 10:30 person would have no idea who the 9 o'clock person was. And the 9 o'clock person would have no idea who the 10:30 person was. And I realized we're actually people who are going to the same building on Sunday morning, and if we're not careful, we'll have nothing else in common, and we won't even know who the other is. And something great about being in this one service since the summer has been we're getting to know one another. We try to create plenty of opportunities for that to happen. We have this beautiful thing called meal groups going on. How many of you are in a meal group? Okay, if you're not in a meal group, when we start these signups again, you need to be in a meal group. And you know what's expected of you in a meal group? Okay, this is going to blow you away. This is really difficult. Here's what's expected. Eating. You don't have to give like a theological opinion on anything. You don't have to, like, it's not, it's literally getting together with people from our community and having a meal together. And whatever you talk about is whatever you talk about. Whatever you share is whatever you share. But it's being in someone's home, having food put in front of you that everybody brought something to help make. And it's sharing your lives and talking about, telling your stories. And I've got to tell you, some of the stories from the meal groups that I've been able to visit and some of the stories from the meal group leaders have just been profound and beautiful to see people opening up their lives to one another, people sharing their needs with each other, people jumping to help these needs. And there's something beautiful and powerful about meal groups, something that you don't get by accident. Right? It happens intentionally. We do something here called Family Ministry Night every Wednesday night, except when school's canceled for snow or you know, whatever. And Family Ministry Night, we're super organized and prepared. Here's what we do. I sit down in the lobby of our building out here with whoever shows up, and we talk about whatever they want to talk about. Religion and the mix-up between religion and politics and all sorts of things come up in this discussion, and it's absolutely beautiful to hear all these people sharing their different opinions with each other. And then, get this is going to shock you. There has not to date been a fist fight in the parking lot. We do them out back so nobody can see. No, there's not been a fist fight because mature, grown-up people can share their opinions and disagree, and then there's something powerful that happens. We dismiss, and people keep talking, and nobody's angry, and everybody's having this. So, like, plugging into some sort of opportunity for conversation like that, you actually get to know other people. Now, one of the things you'll find out about our church, if you haven't yet, is we have some conservative people in our church, and we have some progressive liberal people in our church, and both of them come to the same community, and both of them can sit down and have a conversation. And you know what that does? It humanizes the other side. Right? Because it's one thing to talk about those godless heathen liberals, and it's another thing to talk about those stick-in-the-mud, mean-spirited conservatives. But it's a whole other thing to know somebody from that group and to exchange ideas. Right? Because what you find is most of the time the stereotypes don't fit. And that human beings are complex and our opinions are complex. And I've learned so much from being in dialogue with people in our community who disagree with me, and they're totally wrong. But I've learned a lot by being in dialogue with those people and trying to help them learn how to think better. Right? That's and we kind of take those attitudes sometimes, but the reality is we really can learn a lot from each other. We can learn a lot from people we disagree with, from people we see it a different way than. So first of all, community is never going to be accidental. But then community is grounded in sharing and generosity. There really is no other way to have community. We live in a culture that prizes independence. And part of the reason we don't understand the scriptures is because it comes from a culture that prizes interdependence. And those two things aren't the same. Right? It doesn't mean you lose yourself as an individual, but being a part of a community means you're now locking your life with somebody else and you're kind of depending on one another. And one of the things that happens at our church, like if somebody has a role on Sunday morning and they don't show up, everybody pays the price in some way, right? Like if I didn't show up, some of you may celebrate, some of you may not. But the reality is if I don't show up, something doesn't happen. If our musicians don't show up, something doesn't happen. If somebody in our kids' room doesn't show up, something doesn't happen. Community requires this sort of connecting your life and sharing and being generous with one another in these relationships. The word community here, the believers devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching, to the community, to their shared meals, to their prayers. A sense of awe came over everyone. God performed many signs and wonders through the apostles, and the believers were united and shared everything. The word share, the word community here, is this Greek word I bet you've heard before. It talks about selling property. It's this word koinonia. Let me hear you say koinonia. And it means close association, sharing, or generosity. It comes from this word koinonos, which means partner. We talk about our member. We used to talk about membership here. Now we talk about partnership because, again, you join all sorts of things that you never really intend to participate in. And what we want to be is a community of partners, a community of people who are in this together and working for a common good and a shared mission together. Koinonia is this close association. It's sharing. It's generosity. And all those things demand participation. Right? They demand participation. For us to be the community we want to be, and here's the thing I've come to understand about our church. MCC is an idea. It is an idea that doesn't actually come to fruition unless actual human beings embody it in the world. You with me? Like, it's just an idea. It's a way of seeing the world. It's a way of being in the world. And it doesn't come to fruition until actual human beings say, yes, that's the kind of life I want to be, a community I want to be part of. It's the kind of life I want to live. Let's do this together. And so when we talk about our church, one of the dangers of a church is that it can become about one person or a small group of people, right? It can become about the pastor, which if we create this church around me, we are all in trouble. Thanks, Russell. You're shaking your head. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. If this becomes about me and my thing, then we're in big, big trouble. If this becomes about a couple of volunteers, if it becomes about our elders, if it becomes about our staff, we are in a community that is in trouble. Because here's the reality. I won't be here forever. Right? Someday they will drag me out of here kicking and screaming. And that may happen. Someday we may have a completely different leadership team. And if we build a church around these people, then we're in trouble. We need a church built around all of us. Which means you have ideas. One of the things that often happens in a community is people sit back and go, they ought to do this. Well, sometimes we haven't thought of this. And if you've thought of it, maybe that's something that you've been given the gift of taking the ball and running with. Right? So we need ideas. We need to hear what you're thinking. We need to hear where your heart is. We need to hear the things that you're passionate about. Because we want to create a community that we invite all of us to participate in. And for that to be an actual thing, we need people coming up with, like, what if we tried this? What if we tried to love our broader community in this way? What if we tried to take care of our church better in this way? What if, what if, what if? We welcome the what ifs. And as long as it goes with our mission, and as long as it affirms our values, we will find a way to create the opportunities for people to do the things they're passionate about in the world. That's sort of the job of church leadership. That's sort of the job of church leadership. There's this passage in Ephesians that talks about how the pastors and the teachers and the elders and the leaders, like, their job is equipping the entire community to do the things they've been given to do. Calling people like me a minister is a disservice to the whole church. And in the community I grew up in, while today I would have very many differences of opinion from them, one of the beautiful things they used to print on our program every week was all members ministers, which gets a little dicey when you start trying to take the clergy spots at the hospital, right? But the reality is that's who we are. Every single one of us has this minister role to play in the world, this gift we've been given to share that only we can share in the way we can share it. Community demands partnership. It demands generosity. It demands sharing with one another. And I'll tell you, there's some ways we've struggled some with that. I think we have a beautiful community, but I think we can do even better. I was talking to Deb Duncan, who is one of our elders, but she also is our volunteer children's pastor, and she works so hard. And she told me last week, she said, we had two teachers in K through 5 this week, and it went so much better. She said, do you know how hard it is to try to teach 4th and 5th graders at the same level as K through 3? I said, I don't, and God willing, I won't, right? Like, that's a thing I'm trying not. I have a different role. I'm more of an adult person. But the reality is, she said, we actually had two volunteers step up this week, and it created a whole different scenario for our kids. They got age-appropriate learning, and we were able to engage them in a better way. And the reality is, we just can't get two people in that room every week right now. And she's saying, that's what I need. For us to have the best children's ministry possible, that's what I need. How many of you want us to have the best children's ministry possible? Yeah. Then it's possible that some of us may have to give one Sunday a month or one Sunday a quarter and be willing to step in there and love on our kids and make sure they have a really good experience. I think, I know we're a little thin in some seats today, but typically that's not the case. And the reality is, there's everything we need is in this room. Right? There is nothing that's not present that we need. We have the people, we have the gifts, we have the talents, we have the creativity. And Deb said, you know what I really need is two volunteers in there every Sunday. And one of those some weeks doesn't need to be her, so she can be in here, right? Lena and Allie and Alicia are fantastic. They volunteer in preschool, but we try to give them every other Sunday so they can be in here, because otherwise they won't be in here connected with this part of the community. And so we need volunteers in our children's ministry. We need help in our youth ministry. We need people who are willing to step up and support what they're doing. And all of that stuff is why we take up offerings here on a regular basis. I don't know if you knew that. I don't know if you wondered, like, why in the world do we take up offerings? Believe it or not, it's not just to pay the mortgage. I mean, how many of you pay rent or mortgage? Is that terribly compelling for you? Like, on the first day of the month when you write that mortgage check, are you going, this is why I live? Well, maybe, right? Maybe that's why we live, but that's not why we want to live. We want to be around. We want to do things in the world, not just so we can do the things we have to do. We want to do the things that make the world better. And so every week when we take up an offering, our hope is that we'll meet our sort of operating expenses, so then we can actually take money and pour it into our children and pour it into our students and pour it into good, life-changing opportunities for people in our community to be a part of transformation, to be a part of life change, to be a part of taking that next step. And as you know, as a church, sometimes we struggle with that. We've done a little bit better this year, but we've got a long way to go, and we've got a long year ahead of us, and there's a lot of good work to do. And the struggle for me as a pastor and the struggle for our elders is when people come up with these great ideas, let's do this, and we're like, have you ever made straw into gold? Because that's all we had to give you. And so part of the reason we ask people to be generous and share of their time is because there are people in this community who, our kids and our students and one another, we ask people to open up their homes for meal groups. We do all these things. We ask one another to serve, not because we're not already busy enough, but because we believe that transformation matters, and we believe that the best way that happens is in community with other people. We ask one another to give as generously as we possibly can, which means different things for different people, right? If you're here and you're struggling to pay your bills, we don't want you to miss a bill to give us money, because there are those of us in the room who aren't, and That's the people. It's us. We need to be able, so we can help other people. One of the most beautiful things that happens every year is every Christmas, there's a person in our community who gives us a donation simply to distribute to families in our community who need it around the holidays. And that's a beautiful thing. And we get to do something as a church to love on our brothers and sisters that we couldn't do otherwise. Everything we do depends on the generosity and partnership and investment and involvement of those of us who call this community home. And it really is about sharing our lives together. It really is about being as generous as we possibly can with our time, with our energy, and our talents with one another. And one of the problems we see is that old 80-20 rule. Do you know the 80-20 rule? 20% do 80% of the work. 20% give 80% of the support. And we need to be a church that's somewhere around 100, where everybody here has some sort of buy-in and involvement and investment in what's going on in the broader life of our community. I love this text from Proverbs. As iron sharpens iron, so one person sharpens another. Right, this is why if you're living in a bubble where you only talk to people you agree with, you're missing out. You're not sharpening one another. You're just affirming one another. And being in a community like this is a beautiful gift, because we really can sharpen one another, because we all are going to come from a little different perspective. We're all going to see the world a little different way. And this is the last thing I want to say. Community is transformational, and transformation just can't be contained. Right? You just, when transformation is happening in a person's life, you really can't contain it. It sort of bubbles over and fizzes out into the world. It's like when you shake up a bottle of pop, and I know some of you would call it Coke, but that's not. It depends on what brand it is, right? It's Pepsi. So you shake up a bottle of Pepsi, you crack the top on it, you pour it, and it just goes everywhere, right? I remember when the big Mentos and Coke thing was going on. Did you ever try that? We had a friend who was like, hey, we're going to do the Mentos and Coke thing. And we went in his backyard. We opened up a 2-liter and dropped some Mentos in it. And it was like Old Faithful, man. Unbelievable. That's what transformation's like. You cannot contain it. Notice what the text says about this early community. They praised God and demonstrated God's goodness to everyone. Now, can we just stop there? There is a real tendency among religious people to create enclaves where we only really care about our own people, when there is a bigger world out there. And Jesus' invitation to us was to share this life-changing way of transformation with the whole wide world. To care about the needs and the pain of the whole wide world. We talk about this around here, and this is what we're going to talk about next week. We use the word glocal, global and local. We want to be a glocal church. A church that is impacting and invested in our local community, but also has its eyes and ears and hearts open to the wider world. Right? It's not either or, it's both and. They were sharing God's goodness with everybody. The Lord added to the community daily those who were being saved. That daily is a powerful word, isn't it? People were experiencing the overflow of transformation in these first Christians, and other people were like, I want to be a part of a community like that. I want to be a part of a community like that. And some of you here today are here for that very reason. You met people who are a part of this community, and the overflow of transformation in their life made you want to be a part of this. I don't see him today, but Steve McKinney, one of our elders, he wouldn't mind me telling this. And if he's not here, you know, what's he going to do? But anyway, and you can't tell him. So one of the things he tells me, and I love hearing like how people ended up here. Like, how did you come to MCC? One of the things Steve always says is, I always said I'd never set foot in that church. And he did. And now he's here, and he's one of our leaders, and he and his family are a big part of what we do here. And there's something powerful about that. You see what's going on in a person's life, and you want to engage with it. And that's why a lot of us ended up here. I have a friend who is a part of our church. She's been coming for a couple, 3 years or so now. And she told me the other day, she said, for the very first time in my life, I'm actually excited about going to church, and I'm actually not embarrassed or ashamed to invite people to come with me, because I know they're going to be loved and welcomed, and that there's going to be a space for them there. Did you ever have that, going to church, being afraid to invite your friends because you didn't know? You didn't know how they'd be received. And there's something powerful about being to say, I actually like coming to church. I actually like being a part of this community. I actually like, my family's not a part of a meal group. The meal group team that put them together asked us not to join one, but to sort of float. So we've been to almost all of them last semester. And I just love seeing people gathered together and being a part of those connections And lots and lots of us came because of people we knew whose lives were being transformed. I have some friends who've started coming to be a part of our church, and their names are the Great Houses and James, Mary Jo. That's Mary Jo and Josie over there. And their kids are in children's ministry. Her husband James is working today. The first week of this series, we talked about our mission. And later that evening, James texted me and said, "By the way, this is why we came to this church." And so I was interested, like, okay, I want to hear more about that. And so I asked him to share today about why they came to MCC and what it was for them that brought them here and has kept them here. And he couldn't be here, so he wrote a letter. And so I'm just going to read the letter, if that's okay. And here's what James says. "Here's why we chose MCC. I was raised in a Baptist church, and my wife was raised in a Catholic church. I think we would agree that we fit in with our religions until we started having our own opinions and asking the word, why? Sometimes why was answered with teachings that we just could not accept. And those instances created more whys and why nots. My wife and I also agree that the word hell has been an important part of our spiritual and religious lives. I was not as appreciative as others thought I should be about being told I was going to end up in hell if I didn't agree with everything that I was being taught. My wife will tell you that she doesn't believe in hell or the devil, so you can probably imagine what the church thought about that. For most of our adult lives, my wife and I have never felt we belonged with a church. We started attending her church when we had children because we wanted them to have the opportunity to have a relationship with God. The more our children attended church, it seemed, we attended less and less. Finally, the children's grandmother would pick them up and bring them home, and we stopped attending. We had accepted the fact that there was not a church that we would be able to be a part of without sacrificing the belief of what we felt our relationship with God should be. This brings me to the word that has made the biggest impact on our spiritual and religious lives, love. My mother told me when I was a teen that real love is a special gift, and if we are lucky enough to find that gift, it should not matter who we find it in, what they look like, or what they believe. I have to say, love was not something stressed in the teachings I heard when I was younger. I heard more about fear and judgment than anything else. So back to the question, why did we choose to come to MCC? We've known Brent and Dana Clark for a number of years, and they had invited us to MCC several times. Gosh, I can't imagine knowing Brent for a long time and enjoying the experience, but I guess for some, everybody's different, I reckon. We've known Brent and Dana Clark for a number of years, and they had invited us to MCC several times, but I think my wife and I didn't want to feel the disappointment of not fitting in. Fitting in with society had never been a big concern for either of us, but when someone tells you that the relationship you have with God is wrong, that cuts a bit deep. In the summer of 2016, I decided that I would give MCC a chance. I told Mary Jo that I wanted to go a couple of times and that she didn't have to go if she didn't want to. She was very supportive and said that when I decided to go, she would go with me. I decided on a date I would attend and let her know. It turned out that, as my job often does, I had to change my schedule that week and I was not able to attend, but that didn't stop Mary Jo. I went to work and she went to church. When I talked to her that afternoon, the first thing I asked her was, "So how was church?" She said, "Kind of weird, but it was good." I really liked it. I think if we could have like a slogan as a church, it's kind of weird, but it's really good. You know what I mean? Like, that's just sort of where we're headed. I asked her what was so good about it, and she told me that she felt welcome and the people seemed happy to see her there. Then I asked what was so weird about it, and she said people were nice and they seemed very positive. After that, I couldn't wait until the next week so I could see what she had told me about. The next week came, and I said something I've gotten accustomed to saying after 13 years of marriage. "You were right, Mary Jo. But this time, I meant it." Which is a fantastic line. I've said it a lot, but this time, I really meant it. After attending several weeks, we decided that if we were ever going to find a church that we could call home, MCC was it. When that happened, it was such a relief to me. A relief not only for the fact that we didn't have to be on our own anymore, but also because we had found a place where why and why not are not bad words. Another question could be asked, what has made you decide to stick with MCC? Perhaps you already know. It's one of the words I said earlier that had played a big part in our spiritual and religious lives. Do you have a guess? If you guessed love, you would be correct. But I don't think you guessed it. I love that. Love is probably why you're here right now. Mary Jo and I wanted to feel accepted for loving and respecting those who are not the same as us, believe in different things, and come from different backgrounds. We feel that love is not something to be ashamed of. Love is not something you should be afraid of. I would bet you feel the same way. We try to teach our children what my mother taught me years ago. Love is special, and no one should have to feel bad about expressing love to one another. We receive a presence of positivity and love each time we are here, and we thank you for welcoming us into your family. That's why we've decided to stick with MCC. And if you're here for the first time, you're with us online, and you're looking for a community where you can love all and all are welcomed, maybe you too can call this church home. Yeah. Community is one of those things, and I give Brent a hard time, but Dana's great. And I mean, just that story of them being in relationship and their story of sharing that relationship, and it's just how life works, isn't it? Because transformation spills over. It goes out into the world. It can't be contained. It really can't even be slowed down once it gets going. Here's what Marcus Borg said. Journeying with Jesus means to be in community, to become part of the alternative community of Jesus. And isn't it an alternative community? Different values from the values of empire, different values from the way we structure the world. Discipleship is not an individual path, but a journey in a company of disciples. It is the road less traveled, yet discipleship involves being in a community that remembers and celebrates Jesus. Though that is not the only role of the church, it is its primary role. We are here to be in a community that remembers and celebrates Jesus, and that through what's going on in our own journey, hopefully that will spill over into the broader community and world we find ourselves in, and hopefully other people will, wherever, in whatever context they're in, whether they come here or not, hopefully they'll be encouraged to take the next step on their journey as well. So a few questions real quick, and we're going to close. Are you experiencing transformational community? And the tendency is to always blame somebody else. But here's the question. Am I putting myself in a position to be a part of something transforming? Am I engaging? Am I in a meal group? Am I volunteering? Am I signed up? Am I connected? Whatever that looks like. Am I in a transformative community? Are you engaged in actively participating in community? We have a partnership class coming up you can sign up for if you're looking to put down roots here. We have opportunities like we mentioned in our children's ministry. All those sorts of things are going on that we need help in. And then there's the question we ask every week around here. What is the next right step on your journey? What's just the next right thing to do? Is it to say, yeah, I'll do a week in the children's ministry? Is it to say, gosh, we currently aren't involved in giving and we're going to try to do that as a family? Is it to say, my goodness, I want to sort of enter this journey and be baptized as a part of my process of transformation, letting other people know what's going on in my life? Whatever that next step looks like for you, we invite you to take it as a part of our community. And I'm going to pray and then we're going to wrap up. But as we do, we're going to have elders around who are going to be available. I'll be available if you'd like to talk or pray or have somebody help you sort through something you're going through or just have somebody listen. We would love to do that if you have questions about our church, if you have questions about plugging in. We'd love to help you process that as well. So let's pray. God, we are grateful for this morning. We are grateful for this time to be together, to think about why our church exists and how we've been invited to go about our presence in the world. We want to be a community that's grounded in love. If we take seriously the reality of Scripture that you are love, then where else could we go? What else could we be grounded in but love? A love for all people, not just the people who come and participate in our community, but a love for the whole wide world. May that be our starting point. And may we be on this journey of transformation, opening ourselves, being generous and sharing and compassionate with those around us. And may that transformation not be contained in our own lives or our own community, but may it spill out into the wider world, and may nothing be the same because of it. We love you and we thank you. We pray in Jesus' name. And everybody said, let's stand together. Yes.